Yeah, put it down a little bit. I can't see. That's great. I can't see all you beautiful people over that microphone. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am so grateful. I'd like to thank Colleen for inviting me to the Antioch Speakers Meeting. This is great. I just love to come to Northern California because of the way you celebrate birthdays and all. I mean, that is just fabulous, seeing all that sobriety upon the stage. That is just so good. Congratulations to the CHIP people and congratulations to the birthday. I love to come up here. It's like every time I get to come, I have my buddy Penny and her and Glenn. I get to see them, and it's so special. You guys just really have great AA up here, and I always feel so welcomed and so loved, and that's what's so neat about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a lot of new people in here tonight, and the beauty of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that you just get to feel so loved. And I know with one of the women I sponsor right now is living with me. And we got up this morning, and she was getting ready to go on a bike ride, and I was getting ready to come up here, and we were just standing there saying, geez, we just love our life. And, you know, I get to come up here to Antioch Speakers Meeting, and, I mean, what I did was drink whiskey, and I get to come up here because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is so fabulous. So if you're new, just hang on. I got sober in Texas. Excuse me. I don't know. I think it's something's in the air, and my throat's wanting to clog up on me. I got sober in Texas, and there's a lot of old rednecks up there, and they're real mean. And one of the things that they used to say is that there's three things that makes you an AA member in good standing. And one is that you have a sobriety date, and I gave you that. And they used to say if you don't have a sobriety date, it's probably because you don't have one, if you don't want to give your sobriety date. The next is that you have a home group. And my home group is Monday night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting. And the third is that you have an AA sponsor. And my AA sponsor is Ellen Aldridge. And I'm really grateful to those things because I am a person who has alcoholism real bad. And I need to be in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to have an AA sponsor. And I love what Sharon B. says. I need somebody around who's louder than my head. And there's a guy up in Sacramento by the name of Sterling, and I've stolen a line from him, too, and I just love it. And he says, I may not walk like I talk, but thank God I don't walk like I think, because I am one of these people that really does think. And I need to continue to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I need you to keep me in touch with reality. And I stand here tonight with 19 years of sobriety. And I just knew when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was just so grateful to be sober. But I'm telling you tonight at 19 years of sobriety, I go to more meetings than I have ever gone to. I am of more service in Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. And I sponsor more people than I have ever sponsored. Because I'm here to tell you, at 19 years of sobriety, I have so much more to lose. My life is absolutely fabulous. I have treasures in my life that are beyond anything I expected when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a lot of different wants when I came here 19 years ago. I wanted things. I thought those were the things that were important. In sobriety, I am one of these people that sort of has a riches to rags story. Instead, you know, everybody gets up in sobriety and they lived in a dumpster and now they've got a Mercedes and all of this stuff. Well, that's not my story. Most of the material things in my life have more or less gone in sobriety. But the thing that is so beautiful for me today is I am just so loved. And I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I could have sworn to you that nobody loved me. And I don't have the kind of story that a lot of people have in AA, because I did not come from an alcoholic home. My daddy died at 60 years of sobriety, and he was 60 years old, and he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother is 78 years old, and she has 78 years of sobriety. And I can assure you, she is not the least bit impressed with my 19 years of sobriety. She figures, if you'd have never drank, none of that stuff would have happened to you anyway. And I have never been hurt in any way. No one has ever been violent to me, and no one has abused me in any way. I am an only child, and I not only was loved, I was absolutely adored. So I have nothing to blame my alcoholism on. But I occupy a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sit next to people that I work with who have come from tragic beginnings. And what that tells me is that I have a disease called alcoholism. And I know today, thanks to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I suffer from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that. It tells me that I have a disease that separates me from the sunshine of the Spirit. And because I have a disease that's spiritual in nature, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that nothing is enough. You can't love me enough, you can't give me enough, and you can't do enough. And it's only through a program called Alcoholics Anonymous and finding a God of my understanding that I have been able to begin to feel those feelings of love. Because I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely loved all my life, but I would have sworn to you that nobody loved me. And that was because I had a disease and I was dying of a soul sickness called Alcoholics Anonymous. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I have a threefold illness. I have a spiritual illness. I have a psychological illness or a mental illness. Step two tells me I'm crazy. And I have a physical illness, which means that I have an allergy to alcohol. And I have a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that can treat all three. I love what Clancy talks about. I quote him a lot because I believe that Clancy is probably one of our very best teachers in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it just seems like when Clancy talks, I can hear. And Clancy talks about alcoholism, a disease of perception. And if you've never heard Clancy's tape, Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception, I highly encourage you to get that tape. Because you see, I have a head that cannot hear what's told it. You give me a set of information, it goes in my head, it takes a walk around, and what comes out doesn't even resemble what went in. My perception of reality is distorted. And I need you, because I don't have a clue what the truth is. I don't have a clue what reality is. Left my own head, I couldn't get up in the morning. Because I've got this head is out to get this body every day. I need you to keep me in touch with reality. My head tells me things that are not true. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, and thanks to the direction that I've been given in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have been given actions to take in this program that changes my thinking. I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was a prisoner of my feelings. And I hear all the time about feelings, feelings, feelings. And I do believe that feelings are very important. Unless feelings begin to control me. And then feelings become destructive for a person like me. Because I can get feelings that tell me to do a lot of things that are very destructive. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous and what Clancy says, take actions contrary to the way you feel. I will take these actions. Those actions will change my thinking, and my thinking will change my feelings. And I never, ever knew that I couldn't feel it unless I first thought it. So today I know that I have a set of actions that can change the way I think. And I'm really grateful. And if I continue to take those actions, and I love what Johnny Harris says, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'll keep getting what I'm getting. And I like what I'm getting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Clancy also talks about the disease of alcoholism, and he says that alcohol has nothing to do with the disease of alcoholism. And I totally agree with that. If alcohol were my problem, I would need to continue to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 19 years. But I'm here to tell you that I have a disease called alcoholism. And that disease rests in the mind. And I need to be here real bad. Because I need you to keep me in touch with reality. I want to tell you about my higher power. Because I have this higher power that just has a dynamite sense of humor. And today I know that I have a higher power that just absolutely loves me to pieces. Now, I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I grew up Southern Baptist. So I'm here to tell you, besides being a recovering alcohol and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of old ideas about God. And these preachers I heard, I don't have a clue if they said any of this, but I used to hear these preachers, you know, pound on the podium and their faces would get red and their veins would stick out and they'd lean into the congregation and they'd say things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. And I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making and I thought a lot. And what happened was, as I began to take on this higher power or this God of my understanding, and also this God lived way up in the sky, and you had to go through those people to get to God. And I just knew that God was never, ever going to love somebody like me. And I had this hopeless attitude, and I figured, well, what's the point? And our book talks about, what is the point? Well, I thought about, what's the point, too? What's the point of trying to do good because it doesn't matter? I'm going to burn in hell anyway. And that was the kind of hopeless attitude I had until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you gave me a big book. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me where God is. It says God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God. And it says search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand him, expresses himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I need you every day of my life because it's through you that I learn about me. I have a higher power who has a dynamite sense of humor, and I want to share that with you. My name is Polly. It's not Pauline, it's Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. And it's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I don't know about any of you guys, but I'm sensitive, and I don't like to be teased, and I don't like to be laughed at. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's just no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. Everything has a positive result. And today I love having the name Polly, because I can come into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just like this room tonight, and most of the time, if somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. Because there's just not many Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something. Because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift. Because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am, or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Almost 16 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So, God has a great sense of humor. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I had noticed that pilot, and this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I'm here to tell you, I have never, ever wanted to be responsible for myself. And I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because what this program has taught me to do is to be responsible and accountable for my actions, past and present. And I never, ever wanted to be responsible or accountable. I took a drink of alcohol. It was no big deal. I don't remember, you know, all of a sudden turning into Rita Hayworth and, you know, I don't recall that at all. I just took a drink of alcohol. And I didn't progress to the morning drink. I simply started with the morning drink. And in the Air Force, it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers in the morning, sherry before lunch, martinis before dinner, and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never occurred to me for a very long time that there was anything wrong with my drinking. Now, my husband is a speed freak and an alcoholic. And he remembers the very first drink he had. He remembers when he got drunk. He remembers how it felt. And that's not my story. I know that I took a drink of alcohol, and then one day, I just could not take a drink of alcohol. But what happened for me is if you hang around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, you'll get to hear your story or see your story or something. And I happened to see a sign at an Alano club that described my disease of alcoholism. And it said, the chains of alcoholism were too soft to be felt until they were too strong to be broken. I don't know when I crossed a magic line. All I know that all my entire life, there was something wrong with me. As a little girl, there was something wrong with me. And I believe I needed to drink a long time before I took a drink. And I know that alcohol just sort of took away that feeling of inadequacy, and I'm just not enough. And if I would take a drink of alcohol, I could go to a party, I could be sociable, I could somehow be enough. And without that, I just absolutely was so intimidated by my whole surroundings and everything about me, and I always had such overwhelming feelings of inadequacy. I was just so inadequate. And alcohol gave me a sense of being enough. Along about 1962, we're living in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine, and I've got these two little kids. I don't have a clue how to be a parent. And these two little boys are driving me crazy, and it's 50 below zero, and I can't send them out to play, and I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I go to an Air Force doctor, and this doctor says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Secanol and Nimitol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic because I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. What I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is that this is a family disease, and that whoever lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I know today that the disease of alcoholism absolutely traumatized my children. Now, I have a son that's sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and James tells a very different story than I do about my drinking. Because James talks about a little boy, and he's about 5 years old, and his dad's gone, and his mother's passed out on the sofa. But he doesn't know that his mother's passed out. And this little boy walks back and forth in front of that sofa, and he's absolutely gripped with terror because his father's gone, and he's certain that his mother is dead. And that's the disease of alcoholism. This disease absolutely traumatizes our children. And I am so grateful to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous help us to make amends to the people that we have devastated because of a disease called alcoholism. And I'm so grateful to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was given the courage to sit down with my children and tell them how sorry I am because I am a child abuser. And what I did to my children is I ripped from them the most valuable thing about them, and that was their self-esteem and their self-worth. Because of a disease called alcoholism, I absolutely sent my children a message that you are of no value. I absolutely could not suit up and show up for my children's life. I just couldn't do it. I could not take care of them. I could not suit up and show up for them. And I didn't have to sit there and say, you shouldn't feel that way, because they, by God, should feel that way. It was a very appropriate feeling for what had happened to them. And I'm so grateful for the forgiveness of my children. And I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was able to tell them how sorry I am. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. Great events have come to pass. Because I'm telling you today, I have a relationship with those boys that is beyond anything I could have ever expected. And I spoke to my youngest son today, and he says, Mom, what are you going to be doing this weekend? And I said, well, I'm going up to flying to Oakland, I'm going to Antioch, and I'm going to be talking at an AA meeting. And he said, you be sure and tell those people that your son really loves you. That's a great event that's come to pass. And none of that would have happened had it not been for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps that had been given to us. And those steps, when worked in order, are the necessary actions to produce a spiritual awakening. I just kind of like to tell you some things that brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not wake up one day and say, geez, I think I'll go to an AA meeting. You guys are really great. I ended up wrecking an automobile, and I was taken to a very, very long story, and I want to hurry up through this because I got some other stuff I want to tell you guys. But at any rate, I had a car wreck, and I ended up in treatment. And I really enjoyed this treatment center, and this was no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And I went in there, and they started taking us to a lot of AA meetings. And I loved the AA meetings, but I just really did not believe down deep that I was an alcoholic. I just couldn't believe that people like me became alcoholic. And while I was in this jitter joint, I had, you know, one of those jitter house romances, you know, sick falls in love with sick, and you go off into happy destiny. Well, we did that for 58 days, and I was 12-stepped and brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And you see, I had just defined the disease of alcoholism. And that's what I learned from Clancy on that tape. Alcoholism, a disease of perception. Because you see, I knew I couldn't live sober inside my own skin. I just knew it. And so what I did is I left that treatment center, and I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium. I believe that we all have an Eskimo in our lives. And today I've heard a word that I like even better, that I've been hearing around Southern Californians and down in Texas, and it talks about angels in our lives. And today I know that I had an angel in my life. And this woman said something came over her that day. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And she pushed the door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. It took me a lot of years in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to realize how absolutely precious my life was. It took a very long time for me to understand that I had been given the gift of grace. And I believe that every single alcoholic is given the gift of grace. And grace is a gift unearned. We don't have to do a thing. It's just a free gift. We get to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're given this gift. The really sad thing about it is most alcoholics give it back. I am so grateful that I have been given this gift. And I ended up in a treatment center in Dallas, Texas. And that was on April the 11th of 1977. And I was court committed to this treatment center. And my papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. I'm really grateful for that today, because I know it was my way to get sober. And I know there's a lot of people that don't believe in treatment centers and such as that. All I know is that it was what worked for me. And I'm really, really grateful that this treatment center told me to get a sponsor, to go to AA meetings, and as Dick and Peggy say, just get out there and do the deal. Just go do the deal. And I'm so grateful, because when I got whatever happened, I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a passion for this program. I just love this program so much, and I just got a passion for this program. And the feeling that I have inside tonight is even greater than the feeling that I had then, a passion for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life has absolutely been incredible. At 3 years of sobriety, I married another member of this fellowship. Oh, there's one thing I want to say, is that lots of people come up to me, because I talk about being a couch potato alcoholic and all of that. And here lately, I've been trying to remember to say this, and they'll say, well, did you drink much? And I want you to know that by the time I went to treatment, I was drinking at least a quart of vodka a day and taking a minimum of 20 pills. So I didn't have any idea till later. I mean, the divine grace that all of us get to know that we should have been dead and we're not. The gift that we get to be sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, let me just start saying some of the things that I started to do right away after getting into treatment was to start going to a lot of meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a sponsor. And I started following direction. And I started getting into service. And I'd like to really say that, because there's a lot of people here that are new in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that has never changed. And I thought, gosh, I don't have anything to give to a newcomer. And I was told, if I have 30 minutes more sobriety than that newcomer, then you share that 30 minutes. And begin to do something in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you want to feel a part of, then do something in that group. Pick up the chairs, sweep the floor, be of service. Because I hear this all the time. I go to a meeting. Gosh, I didn't see anything in that meeting I liked. I didn't like that meeting. And I always want to say, what did you bring to that meeting? You never feel like you belong in a meeting until you do something in that meeting. And today I know that if I want to be a part of, then I must contribute to my own sobriety. And I'm so grateful that I had an AA sponsor that looked me straight in the face and said, Polly, it is not my job to work on your sobriety harder than you work on your sobriety. So I'm really grateful today that I was told to do the things that I was told to do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. At 3 years of sobriety, I married another member of this fellowship. And Dave and I will be married 16 years in October. And I am more in love with Dave today than I was when we got married. And it's all because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you that when Dave and I got married, neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. Both knew how to capture a hostage, but neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. And we began to get some, you know, I saw people. My first AA sponsor is in the big meeting in the sky, and Frank had been a Monsignor priest, and he had left the priesthood, and he had married a Taiwanian woman. And I loved what Frank and Oroko had. I loved what they had. And Frank used to tell me, he says, Polly, if you take your AA program, if you and Dave will plant it firmly, plant yourself firmly in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just like two oak trees planted side by side. He said, and then you let those trees grow strong and firm. He says, one day you'll look up and you can't tell where one branch begins and the other one ends. And he says, and that's the kind of relationship you'll have in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, if you'll treat Dave like a newcomer all the days of your life, you'll have a wonderful marriage. And how do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And then I met this lady at Alcoholics Anonymous in Southern California, and her name was Ellen. And Ellen had a lot of sobriety when I met her. She had about 28 years of sobriety at that point in time. And she was married to a man named Red. And when Red died a year ago last November, he'll be dead 2 years this coming November. When Red died, he and Ellen had been two alcoholics married in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 31 years. And Red had 32 years of sobriety, and today Ellen has 38 years of sobriety. And I want what they had. And I want to do like they did. And Red and Ellen brought people into their home, and they helped them work the steps. And they gave them themselves in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they did it, and they loved each other. And I want what they have. And I started doing what they do. And then Dave and I ran into this couple in Omaha, Dick and Peggy. And Dick and Peggy began to talk about working the traditions in their relationships. And Dave and I were like, my God, what a concept. You know, we read in our meetings, the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. My gosh, and Dave and I are a group. And we began to work the traditions in our relationship. And I'm so grateful for the direction that I've been given, because almost 16 years later, I have a relationship like I've always dreamed of having. And Dave and I have known each other since I got sober. And we didn't get married. We were AA buddies until I was 3 years and Dave was 4 years. And we often say if we'd have known we were going to get married, we would have never told each other the things we told each other. But I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful for that relationship today. And Dave and I have learned to let each other go. And you go be the very best Dave you can be, and you go be the very best Polly you can be. And bring back to that relationship the very best of both of us. And Dave and I are very different people. Dave, I'm just kind of a yakker. Today tonight at dinner, Glenn can even get a word in edgewise. You can't even slide a word in when I'm talking. And Dave is just kind of one of these, like, you know, just kind of mellow guys. And he loves to go and throw a 40-pound pack on his back and walk around on top of mountains, and that's not my deal. I'm grateful. I just think it's just really super that he likes to do it, but I don't like to do it. But what I love is that we can let each other go and go be the very best that we can be. And those are the things that you have given me. In the past 3 years, Dave and I have had some things happen that have been really growing experiences. Somehow or another, Dave kind of went through it all a whole lot better than I did. And I think that his acceptance and his outlook on life is a lot better than mine. But I really believed that when my son came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had my 14-year-old son at the time when I got sober was a full-blown drug addict and alcoholic. And I just didn't believe it was fair. And it was you that told me to suit up and show up. And my oldest son tried to take his life many times in the rooms of Alcoholics, and when I was sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just couldn't believe that this could be happening. I mean, my gosh, you know, I'm sober now. How can these things be happening? And you brought me through all of these things. And somehow, as horrible as all that was, it didn't affect me like the past 3 years have affected me. Because somehow, what has happened in the past 3 years had so much pride and ego attached to it. And the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the steps being the leveling of the pride. And I can tell you that I used to tell this story and I'd have this infliction in my voice so that when, you know, I was through talking, you would come up and, you know, tell me how sorry you were for me. I'm really grateful for what I can see today. And that I see that what was happening was nothing but pride and ego. 3 years ago, in June of 1993, my husband was in one of these downsizing deals at Unisys in Southern California. And he lost his job. Now, we didn't think too much about this. I mean, you know, Dave is a computer scientist. I mean, there's lots of jobs out there for computer scientists. But what we found out real quickly is the world was not looking for a 57-year-old computer scientist. And if something didn't happen real soon, we were going to lose our home. Well, nothing happened very soon, and we lost our home. And I'm here to tell you, I had my fist at God. How can this be happening to me? Don't you see how much service I am in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? It was like, I'm sober, and I need to be rewarded for being sober. I mean, the gift is I'm sober. I get the privilege of not needing a drink of alcohol. I have been relieved of the obsession to drink, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and somehow I feel like I need to be rewarded. And then I began to realize, what will people think? I mean, after all, we're sober 16 and 17 years. What are people going to think if we lose our house? You know, this isn't supposed to be happening to people who have sobriety. This is the kind of stuff that happens to newcomers, not to people like us. But it was definitely happening to us. And I felt so ashamed and so embarrassed because I just could not believe. I would just think, what will people think? What kind of program do they think we work if we can't, you know, if we're losing our home? The humiliation, the pride, the ego. And then people would call us up on the phone and say, geez, would you guys like to go out to dinner? Now don't say no, because we're going to take you and we're going to pay. Ugh. And then I learned, you know, when you're doing the giving, you're in control. When you do the receiving, you're very vulnerable. There's a guy in Washington, D.C. by the name of Sandy B. And Sandy talks on his tapes about we come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and our receivers are broken. And you see, at 16 years of sobriety, I didn't know that my receiver was broken. I was having a real hard time receiving the love that I was getting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, somebody comes up to me and says, oh my God, we're losing our house, da 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 da. And it's just, sit down, sweetheart. Been there, done that. You know, you can do it. And I'm really grateful today. People are always talking about their claim to fame. I graduated from high school in Port Arthur, Texas in 1958. And I was a senior when Janis Joplin was a sophomore. And Janis Joplin used to sing a song, Freedom is Having Nothing Left to Lose. And I never understood that until freedom was having nothing left to lose. And today I know that that's just things. The most valuable thing I have is my relationship with Dave. And you see, David had been my friend, and David had been my lover. And what we discovered is we were partners in life. And we never looked at each other and said, it's your fault, or you should do something, or you should do something. That's never what we did. We loved each other, and we supported each other, and we walked the walk. And I'm really grateful today for the experience. It's the relationship I have with Dave today. I know without that experience, I don't believe that we would have ever had the experience we have today. Then another story about pride and ego is that I started working for the company that I work for today, and that was in 1993, and I was hired on, and I was the boss. And I had these people that worked for me. And then in 1994, they hired another lady that was younger than my youngest child. And she was going to be the boss. Now, they weren't going to take my salary away. I was going to make the same salary, but I wasn't going to have any power anymore. And I want you to know, for 1 year I went to work and my stomach turned. And I would talk. I would say, "Oh, I'm so glad she has the job." And I'd just go in there and I'd smile and, you know, just call her all these names. And, you know, every day I would pray for her. I would do all the stuff that my program tells me to do. But you see, the pride and the ego was that I was no longer the boss. And then one day I'm sitting on the phone after I've made about the sixth AA talk. And I wasn't sitting on the phone. I was walking from the copy machine and I had this revelation hit me. Oh my God. Here, every morning I get out of bed, I get on my knees, and I do what the big book says. I pray to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. And God had given me a gift, and it took me 1 year to see it. I made the same exact money. I was doing a tenth of the job. I had all this time to make AA calls. It was like for 1 year God's going, "Hello, hello." Pride and ego. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the leveling of the pride. When I was 6.5 years sober, my younger son called me on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." And 6.5 years before, my son did not want what I had. 6.5 years before, my son, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he says, "Don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you." And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And I love the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I had 12-stepped a lady into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what she did is she 12-stepped my son into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love what Albert M. says. Albert says, "You know, I can't 12-step my kids, but I can 12-step your kids." And that's what happened to me. I could not bring this message to my son. But I was so angry when I found out that my son was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And the message I got was, "Polly, you suit up and show up because you may be the only big book that James ever reads." And today, I take that very serious. I take how I behave as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous very seriously. And if nobody's told you that you make a difference today, please let me tell you that you make a difference. If you are a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you make a difference. Because you see, this is a program of attraction, not promotion. And it's real important how I behave outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And our 12th step says that I practice these principles in all my affairs. Because you see, I never ever know who's watching me. I never ever know if I'm the big book that somebody can't read. And it's my responsibility, I believe, as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to behave like a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My oldest son was someone who was full of desperation, and Russ is not an alcoholic. But I understood Russ really well because I understood the kind of depression he had. And I understood what it felt like to want to hurt yourself physically just so you couldn't feel it emotionally. And I understood his desperation. And my oldest son tried to take his life 6 times. And people in AA would say, "Turn him over, turn him over, turn him over." And you know, I would just leave a meeting and grab hold of my steering wheel and say, "But would somebody please just tell me how? Just please tell me how to turn him over." I believe that when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I was doing much like I'm doing tonight, except it was on a Saturday morning and I was in Georgia. And my daughter-in-law called me on the phone, and she said that my son was in the hospital one more time. He put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I had to get up the next morning, and I had to talk, and I just was so torn down, I could hardly talk. When I got through talking, this man walked up to me, and he said, "Young lady, you and I need to talk. We need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we need to read the chapter to the agnostic, and you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing, and that Russ is God's kid, and what God does with his kids is none of your business." And with that man's help, I was able to release my son. And today, I know that when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And he came at a time when I could hear, and I was able to release my son. This November, it'll be 8 years since my son has tried to hurt himself. And I'm here to tell you that that's a great event that's come to pass. On May 1993, a great event came to pass. And his name is Ryan David Klinger Lee, and he's my grandson. And only the grandparents in here will understand that the only reason you have kids is so you can have grandkids. They are the best. And this little guy, if you were down at Bill W.'s big family reunion in San Diego, Ryan was there and he was the main attraction. And he's got this blonde, curly hair, and people are always coming up saying, "Polly, he looks just like you." And, of course, I love that. And he's just the apple of my eye. Well, when Ryan was a year and a half old, we got some devastating news. We found out that Ryan was profoundly deaf. And one more time, I had my fist at God. How can this be happening to me? Don't you see how much service I am in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? Because you see, one more time, I had this disease of perception. And I didn't see that God was giving me this great gift. And it was only my perception that couldn't see the gift. Because what happened is that because of you, because of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you see, Kelly is 7 years sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and James is 12 years. And because of what you've done with them, they are the very best parents I have ever seen. Because of you, they have such patience. And any time you have a child that has special needs, it requires so much patience. And these kids just never complain, they just do it. And they are wonderful parents. And then the other is that James comes from a family that's been torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. And Kelly comes from a family that's torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. Because of this little boy, the only way we can communicate with him is through sign language. And because all of these families, and I mean this little boy has grandparents everywhere, all kinds of grandparents, and all of us are learning sign language. And all of us have been brought together because of this little boy. And I'm going to tell you one more story about Ryan. We found out that James and Kelly were going to have another baby. And they suggested that she have this test run because she had had one child with a birth defect. And she went to have this test done, and they found out that she was about to abort the baby. And they did a surgery on her and put her to bed rest for the next 5 months. And we believe with all our heart that because Ryan is deaf, he saved his brother Christian's life. Because Christian was born April the 16th, and he is an absolutely, perfectly healthy little boy. And if it hadn't have been for Ryan, Kelly would have never, ever had the test. So we never know the gifts that God is going to give us. Not too long ago, I was talking up in a group up in Rancho Cucamonga, and this lady came into the group, and I saw that she came in, and the secretary came running up to me, and he said, "Oh my God, Polly, this lady has just got 4 days of sobriety, and she's deaf, and she doesn't read lips." And I said, "Mike, no problem, I sign." And I was able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to this lady because she was deaf. And because of Ryan, I knew how to sign. You see, we never know the gifts that we're going to get. And my perception, it looks so terrible, but it always is the very best thing that could possibly happen. And it's real important to me that we keep Alcoholics Anonymous just the way it is. Dr. Bob told Bill, don't mess this program up with Freudian concepts. And he said, keep it simple. And he says, if we boil down this program, it can be boiled down into two words, love and service. And it's real important to me that we keep this program just the way it is. Because you see, I think Ryan's going to need you. And I want this program just like it is when I came 19 years ago. And I want this program just the way it was when James came 12 years ago. Because when Ryan comes, I want it to be this way. I don't want it to be all confused with Freudian concepts. I want the magic of one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. I want the magic of sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I want the magic of the steps. I want the magic of singleness of purpose. And I'm going to steal a story from my son's story, and it is a true story. When you do tests on little babies, you have to put them to sleep. And we needed to see the degree of Ryan's deafness. So they did some tests and they put him to sleep. And they gave him the medication and nothing happened. And they gave him the medication again and nothing happened. And the third time he finally went to sleep. And when he came to, he was doing this. And that's more in sign language. This program is if your very life depends on it, because it does. It absolutely does. If you'd have told me to make a list of all the things that I'd have wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that He's given me. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave and friends like you. Because you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I will settle for anything. I will take what's not enough. God is willing to give me the keys to the kingdom. And He has given me the keys to the kingdom. I came here and I truly believe that there was no way I was enough. And there are not all the times that I feel like I'm enough today. And I hear in this program, you can't love someone till you love yourself. I'm here to tell you, if I would have waited in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous till I loved myself, I'd have never done a thing. Thank God I was told to reach out and help another person, and by doing that, it would be given back to me. Left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. Because of you, you have breathed life into me. And this program has made me enough. And there are many days today that I feel like I am enough. And that's a great event that's come to pass. I am a faithful wife for almost 16 years. And that's a great event that's come to pass. But I always felt like such a failure as a mom. And my sons have told me, Mom, you are the mom we always wanted you to be. And I'm here to tell you, my friends, that's a great event that's come to pass. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer. And I end my AA talks with it, because it's what this program means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. God bless. I love you.